Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast. I am, as always, your ever humble host, Michael Boldea. And today, being April 11th, 2024, it would seem I got left behind along with everyone else. I know. What a surprise. Jesus didn't come on the eclipse. And so now all the people that kept going on and on about this being the day, get ready, pack your bags, have a lot of egg on their face. But it seems as though man has lost the ability to blush. There is no shame in our game anymore, as the kids like to say. And so they'll just go on to a next date. They'll just go on to a next thing. They'll just, well, you know, maybe something further down the line, you know, 2-3 years, so they have the momentum. They have enough time to fleece the sheep anew, because it'll take, you know, a couple of weeks for the people who are fully expecting to get raptured on the eclipse to forget about the fact that the same people telling them they're going to get raptured in 2 years told them that they were going to get raptured on the eclipse so they can, you know, come back with a new book, a new series, a new whatever, and get you all excited all over again. Look, we've discussed this at length. I've made my position clear. And a lot of people, even people that I thought were, you know, Christ-centered and heavenly-minded, took me to the woodshed. They sent in emails about why would you take away people's hope, and I'm reading these things and I'm like, well, false hope isn't hope. I wasn't taking away people's hope. I was standing on the gospel and presenting a gospel-centered opinion on what I thought would occur Monday. I guess 3 days ago. I know. Even if you account for all the, you know, Central Standard, Eastern, Pacific time, it's not happening, kids. At least not this go-around. The next eclipse is in 21 years, so fingers crossed. I kid. I don't think we have 21 years left. But we spend so much time looking for dates, looking for something in the future that we have no time left to cement our relationship with Christ. We have no time left to read the Word, to be saturated in the Word, to understand what the Word of God says regarding the times that we're living in. Because, yes, there are things that are about to come upon the earth. The only issue is that those things that are about to come upon the earth will be seen by the children of God as well, meaning we will be here. I know, controversial. But then again, go back to the Word. Go to the Bible, argue with it, because I'm done arguing about this. How many more times do we have to have, you know, the imminent rapture alert before we realize that people are looking for excuses not to do the hard thing? And the hard thing is to deny themselves, to pick up their crosses, and to follow after Christ. You know, I didn't prepare anything for today's broadcast because I was as hopeful as everyone else. May this be the day. I kid, of course. But we need to grow up. We need to mature. We've gotten so used to hopeism being the part and parcel of the modern-day church, that if somebody doesn't come along with something bombastic, with some date or something that they believe will happen, you're like, but we need to be satisfied in Christ. We need to be satisfied with the Word of God. If God gives a word of warning, it's for you to prepare. And I understand that there's warnings and then there's warnings. Some people don't like the idea of being warned that this nation is about to fall under judgment. They do, however, revel in the idea that, hey, the Jesus bus is coming and you're on it as soon as the moon crosses over the sun. And it's not something that will be easily remedied within the church. And my only hope and prayer is that people don't get bitter and disillusioned at God for having been lied to by men. I think that's the best way I can put it. I hope people don't get bitter and disillusioned with God for having been lied to by men. Because God never said in his word that a eclipse or the eclipse or however you want to phrase it would be the harbinger of Christ's return. Men came up with this idea, and I've said this before, and it bears repeating. If you stare at the clouds long enough, you start seeing shapes in them. And the modern-day church, the Western church especially, because this stuff doesn't play in places where people are being persecuted and hunted, where they're actively suffering for the cause of Christ. It only plays in places where we're so obscenely comfortable that any sort of discomfort is deemed persecution on our part. So we need to understand that real persecution is on the horizon, and not just feeling let down by the fact that something didn't happen when certain people said it would. Again, if God didn't say it, but men did, don't grow bitter towards God if it didn't happen. See, God is not mandated. You don't put him in a corner and go, well, I declared this, therefore you have to do it. It doesn't work this way. And people are beginning to see that over and over and over again, we're getting distracted from the truth, we're getting distracted from the way, we're getting distracted from the word, and we're looking at these things. But back to my original idea, people aren't just looking to the clouds and seeing shapes. They take that shape they see and they begin to wonder, what does it mean? Look, your imagination caused you to see, I don't know, a dog walking a hamster on a leash. But to take it one step further and go, what does it mean that a dog is walking a hamster on a leash? It's just foolishness. It's futility. And yet this is the cycle that we've been caught up in. Even people that are studying prophecy, studying end time prophecy, and with each new cycle, with each new iteration, people's hearts are growing colder and colder. They're losing hope. Well, your hope is not in an eclipse. It's not in a sign. It's in the return of Jesus. And Jesus said, there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars being among them, but signs in and of themselves are not messages. They're just signs. They tell you that whatever Jesus said would happen is nearing. It's coming near. So I wanted to get that out of the way first thing, because there's other things we need to get into. And I didn't want to omit that, because it was a big thing, man. People were paying, what, $1,000 a night for motel rooms just to be, in the right place at the right time to see the eclipse. I was planning on going outside and looking up. I even came home early from the office that Monday, and I was so exhausted I fell asleep around 11 and in my chair. And I woke up like 3:30. It was already over. It was daylight out. So I missed the whole thing. Maybe that's why I didn't get raptured, because you'd have to be staring directly at it, you know, to see. People. Okay. So there we are. We're recording from home today because they're replacing the tracks on the railroad right next to the office. And apparently there is much noise. And so I decided we'd record from here. It's nice and quiet. The kids are at school. And I wanted to talk about this because there's, even within Christendom, even within the people of God, there's this growing narrative that what's happening in Israel and in Gaza is something that is wholly beyond the pale. I told you a long time ago that this administration would throw Israel under the bus. They have. But I ran across this article, and I need you to understand that, that not all civilians are innocent victims. A lot of them side with Hamas. A lot of them side with the terrorists. A lot of them hold the same beliefs. So a former Israeli hostage who was freed during a truce in November said that she was abducted from her home in Israel by Palestinian civilians, and then they in turn sold her in Gaza to Hamas terrorists. So it wasn't Hamas who kidnapped her, it was Palestinian civilians. And then they in turn sold her to the terrorists. And I hope it provides some context as to what those living in Israel have to contend with. So this lady, her name was Nili Margalit. She's 42. She's still alive, so it wasn't her name. It still is. And she's on a tour of Europe to raise awareness that there are still 133 Israeli hostages in captivity. And she gave an interview, and she said that after she was kidnapped from her home by Palestinian Arab civilians, they negotiated with Hamas to sell her. When they were paid, she was taken straight into the tunnel. Although there are, I believe there are people that are victims of both sides living in Gaza who don't want to see the eradication of an entire nation, who don't want to see the eradication of an entire people. It's likely far less than you might think. Look, a lot of the people living in Gaza have been indoctrinated and are indoctrinating their children. And this woman makes the point, and it's a good point. She says there are children who, from the moment they're born, are taught that Israel is Palestine and just to hate Jews. And this is demonstrable because this has gone on for so long that generation after generation has come and gone, and yet the hatred lives, the hatred survives. So before we jump into a position and go, well, Israel should just go pack it up and go back home, everyone has a right to survive. I've made that point clear over and over again, but I thought this would illuminate. I thought this would contextualize the current situation that's going on in Israel. It's not as simple as everyone seems to think, especially in the administration. Well, just, you know, go back home. Never mind all those people that were killed. Never mind all those people that are still being held hostage. You know, omelets and eggs and all that. So before you declare genocide on one side or another, understand that some situations are more complicated than a 90-minute movie where the problem is presented and by the end of the 90 minutes, everyone is happy, everything is solved, the hero goes off into the sunset, happy that he did a noble thing. Use wisdom, use discretion. Have an opinion, but make sure that your opinion is bolstered by the facts. Now, another thing that I noticed, and it was recent, this was today, is that the narrative that Ukraine's cleaning Russia's clock seems to get some holes poked into it based on what the Ukrainian parliament just did. So Ukraine's parliament just passed a law Thursday, and it's a law that will govern how the country recruits new conscripts. They delayed this for months, and they had a bunch of amendments. But the reality is that the Ukrainian army is running out of bodies. It's a sad reality. People are dying. And if it's just a numbers game, the Russians are going to win. Even with all the influx of weapons and money and everything else, the reality is still that Ukraine is running out of bodies. And so this tells us something that I think the West has been trying to avoid for a very long time. They will have to come to the decision whether they put boots on the ground in Ukraine and literally spark the Third World War, or allow the Ukrainians to die to the last man and you have a nation full of women and children. Those are the only two options. Because right now, they just need bodies. What? They want 500,000 more troops. And this has been going on for a long time because it's not popular with the Ukrainian people. Conscription age has gone down to, what, 25? But pretty soon you're going to have 16-year-olds in, whatever Che Guevara shirts and smoking pot trying to take out professional soldiers. But exhausted soldiers on the front line since Russia launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine had no means to rotate out for rest. While many thousands of Ukrainian men evaded the draft. So this law that was passed to the backdrop of an escalating Russian campaign that has devastated Ukraine's energy infrastructure is a new bid to get fresh blood into the dwindling numbers of the Ukrainian army. Incumbent Army Chief Oleksandr Sirsky have tweaked the numbers, I guess, and they said, hey, we don't need that many soldiers, but we still need some. And so young men are being conscripted to go and die in a war that isn't really theirs, because right now it's the West that keeps encouraging the Ukrainians to keep going because, well, they have a goal and a purpose and an agenda. And they couldn't care less about the Ukrainian people or the mothers that are going to weep over their dead sons. As long as they can maintain the narrative, as long as they can kick this can down the road to see if they do need to start all-out war before the elections, because things aren't looking their way. There's so much to talk about, but I would be remiss if I didn't talk about one of our favorite Mensa candidates, someone that we discussed earlier episode as also being a theological luminary. The reason I want to talk about this today is for you to understand the intelligence level of the people that are insisting you should listen to their opinion and do what they say. ABC legal analyst Sunny Hostin, the woman who insisted that Jesus got up for the transgenders on an earlier broadcast, said on Monday's The View that the eclipse, the earthquakes, and the cicadas could lead one to believe that climate change exists. Give this woman her professor spot at Harvard. I mean, you rarely come across this sort of intelligence. Hostin, I know, right? I have to say, one of our wonderful makeup artists, when the earthquake was happening, she put her coat on and she was like, Jesus is coming, I'm out, I'm leaving. We got a solar eclipse, we've got an earthquake. She ran down the hallway. And look, these people mock because supposed Christian leaders have been pumping this for the past 6 months. Griffin, the rapture is here. Hobson, the rapture is here. Also, I learned that the cicadas are coming. Goldberg, cicadas. Hobson, for the first time in 100 years. This is what people listen to. And Hostin's conclusion was this. All those things together would maybe lead one to believe that either climate change exists or something is really going on. So this is the theological powerhouse that was giving Christians a tongue-lashing for not embracing men in dresses. Thank you. Appreciate it. I think I'll pass. But again, I cannot fault the godless for mocking Christians because Christians aren't teaching the gospel. And so when they start mocking, oh, rapture, 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 well, because all the Christians were saying it. Everybody packed their bags and they left notes on their fridges. Please feed my pet turtle for anyone that would come into their house to see if they were missing. Do you understand that the Bible makes it very clear that unless the great falling away come first and the man of sin is revealed, we're not going anywhere. I know. There you go. Now I've alienated the rest of you. But I cannot teach something contrary to Scripture. It doesn't matter who it upsets. It doesn't matter who gets a bee in their bonnet. It doesn't matter, well, who are you? I'm nobody. I'm a guy sitting in his chair in his home in Wisconsin, but I know what the book says. And even though 1,000 other people could say 1,000 different things, I still have to go back to the book and allow it to have the final say. That's the reality of it. Now, I didn't want to do today's program and just yuck everybody's yum again. I know I keep using this even though my daughter introduced it into my vocabulary. It's funny. But the big thing, the thing that we're all supposed to notice this week is Stephen Furtick's sweater. I know. You're thinking to yourself, really? Indeed. We've talked about this man on and off. If you're sitting under his teaching, understand that it's not teaching. It has nothing to do with the Bible. It has nothing to do with the Word of God. Positive affirmations and an insistence on seeing something in the mirror that isn't there. I'll just leave it at that. But apparently everyone was up in arms because Stephen Furtick wore an oversized sweater made of alpaca and reindeer, or yak. It wasn't so much that it was hideous and flamingo-colored, but that this thing costs $2,000 for a sweater. $1,000. That's a mortgage for most people. But this man had no qualms about paying $2,000 for an ugly sweater and then coming on and spending the length of his message, whatever it is, not mentioning the resurrection, not mentioning Jesus, not mentioning atonement or the blood of Christ. Because, you know, we're seeker-friendly. Well, what are you seeking people for? If it's not to come to the knowledge of Jesus, if it's not to submit themselves and humble themselves at the foot of the cross, why exactly are you seeking people? So you could afford a $2,000 ugly sweater? And it is. It's hideous. Now, granted, if I purchased it, it wouldn't be baggy. It wouldn't be oversized. It would just be a, you know, tight fit. But, hey, you know, give the man his due. Stephen Furtick works out and apparently eats right. But if you go and you Google the sweater and him wearing it, you understand why so many people are mocking it. But the underlying thing about all of this is that a man that's supposed to lead the people of God, a man that's supposed to be a shepherd, has no qualms spending a mortgage payment, and that's probably what the average parishioner at his church pays in their mortgage, for an ugly sweater. These people are so disconnected from reality. And the question that I have, the question that must be asked, is people are living in such excess, if people are living in such glut, do you think that these people will be willing to give up all of it for the sake of Christ when called upon to do so, if called upon to do so? I understand that some of you feel some kind of way about the idea that persecution is on the horizon. You don't want to believe it, and that's your choice. But I have to tell you what I know is coming and what I see in the Word of God as the eventual progression of what the godless do to the saints. It begins with verbal threats. It goes to physical threats, and eventually it goes to martyrdom. And if you're unwilling to endure to the end, you might as well pull the ripcord now, because you will have to endure to the end, because Jesus said, "He who endures to the end shall be saved." So that's the reality that will soon be upon us. Men will persecute you for his name's sake. And one of the biggest reasons that persecution is coming is those that are supposed to be ambassadors of Christ, those that are supposed to teach the truth, are teaching fables and compromising with the world. There's still that handful. There's still that remnant that is unwilling to compromise with the world, and the world will point to those that are currently compromising and say to the remnant, why can't you be more like them? Why can't you do this and that? A Presbyterian pastor, just listen to this. This is a bona fide Presbyterian pastor who tried to host BDSM 101 workshops with a dominatrix. I'm not making this up, is honored with the Chaplain of the Year Award by the ACSLHE. I don't even know what that is, but her name is Beatrix Wheel, and she is an ordained minister of the Presbyterian Church USA, and she also served as chaplain of Rhodes College, a 2,000-student liberal arts college also associated with the PCUSA, which is the Presbyterian Church USA. So this woman became internet famous for trying to host workshop on BDSM with a local dominatrix to share wisdom on how to safely, sanely, and consensually learn about bondage, discipline, domination, sadism, submission, and masochism, because why not? Again, the world will point to people such as these, and they will say, why can't you be more like them? Now, the answer will obviously be because their conscience is seared and they have nothing in common with Jesus, and because they too are going to hell. But the world will not accept that as an answer, because to them, anyone that calls themselves a Christian is a Christian by affirmation, because they identify as such. And so you could be a Christian that puts on a workshop about, you know, bondage, discipline, domination, sadism, masochism, and submission, reject everything that Jesus says we ought to do, such as deny ourselves, pick up our crosses, and follow him, and still be a Christian. See, if you allow for the world to define what Christianity means, if you allow for the world to define what a Christian ought to be in their eyes, then you've already lost. The world does not determine what a child of God is. The Word of God determines what a child of God is. You use that as the plumb line. You use that as the standard. And it doesn't matter how likable they are. It doesn't matter how many books they've written. It doesn't matter how popular they've become with the young. If they don't meet the standard, the biblical standard, then they are by definition not of Christ. Can we stop playing these games? Because it's going to get worse. And that few handful of people, that remnant that still clings to the way of the cross, that handful of people that still says, no, this is what the book says, we need to follow it. More and more pressure will be brought to bear on them because of foolishness like this. Because the world will have someone to point to and go, now that's a Christian we like. Ironic, isn't it? Despite the college ultimately canceling the event, Wheel was none worse the wear, with her home church recently announcing she was named Chaplain of the Year by the Association for Chaplaincy and Spiritual Life in Higher Education. There you go. We generally have a low view of college chaplains, following the vast majority highly compromised and unbiblically ecumenical. The fact that the ACSLHE, which has over 150 member colleges and universities, believes that Wheel is the Chaplain of the Year, means that they can join her in our contempt and scorn. Indeed. So, it's an odd thing when some demand more righteousness and holiness of the godless than they do of people in leadership of churches. It's odd, isn't it? Because this is the narrative that's going to keep building until November. There's no righteousness in him. Well, there's no righteousness in this faux pastor either. Deal with that first. Another thing that we have to understand, and excuse me while I sip from my delicious beverage, I made it myself. Ooh, espresso. Almost thick enough to eat with a spoon. What happens in other nations, as far as the constricting of Christian beliefs and of Christians in general, the worst of it eventually makes its way here. And if the people making the laws have only evil in their hearts, then the laws they put on the books will serve to persecute the children of God. Have no doubt about this. France's gender equality minister demands that a priest be prosecuted for calling homosexuality a weakness. He didn't even call it a sin. He called it a weakness. A government leader in France is calling for a Catholic priest to be prosecuted after he posted a video on his Instagram calling homosexual inclinations and desires a weakness, according to a report from the Christian Post. You are not allowed to have a biblical opinion. You could say anything you want about Christians. They believe in spaghetti monsters and zombies and we've heard it all. No one's calling for their prosecution. There's people that are burning churches and burning Bibles and doing all manner of things. Call homosexuality or homosexual inclinations and desires a weakness. Well, we need to prosecute that. And I know you're thinking to yourself, it's France. Give it a minute. Just give it a minute. In a video shared with his 60,000 followers, Matthew Raffrey, a priest of the Institute of the Good Shepherd, shared, "We all have weaknesses. Those who are greedy, those who are angry, those who have homosexual tendencies." This extremely mild commentary earned the ire of Aurore Berger, a politician serving as France's minister delegate to gender equality and fight against discrimination. What do you think is going to be used as the excuse to persecute the children of God? Because it has to be cocooned in something that sounds really good and inclusive. This is a minister for gender equality and fight against discrimination. All this priest did was say, it's a weakness. Didn't even call it a sin. Put it along with greed and anger and everything else. But no, you can talk about everything else except that. That singular perversion that is defining a generation, you cannot speak against it. You cannot call it a weakness. You cannot call it a sin. You have to validate it and celebrate it. And the American church, many denominations have already gone along with this. If you validate something, then you celebrate something. How can you ever call that thing a sin? How can you ever say it's wrong? How can you ever say it's unbiblical? We're looking at the sun and the moon and the stars waiting for rapture while what is supposed to be the church is crumbling under the weight of its own hypocrisy and evil. Because we did not take into account all the warnings of the Bible that there would be men who would creep in unnoticed. There would be deceivers and wolves who would come attempting to destroy the household of faith. We look to those people and go, hey, they can afford a $2,000 sweater. Something must be going right. Because every metric we use is the same metric the world uses to define success, to define right, to define someone doing the work humbly. Well, $2,000. You cannot deny the fact that the man bought a $2,000 sweater. Well, if that's the metric you use for success, then Godspeed. So, following the unbearable remarks relating to homosexuality, which I refuse to reproduce here, this is a tweet or a you still call it tweets, right? It's not X. I don't have one. I don't know. I've never had a Twitter account, so I didn't transition to X. But apparently, this was a tweet translated from French. Following the unbearable remarks relating to homosexuality, and which I refuse to reproduce here, all the man did was call it a weakness. But you gotta gin up animosity, you gotta gin up hatred, you gotta gin up a ferocious blowback that people lose their ability to reason for a little while and actually prosecute this man. I asked the DILCRAH to make a report to the public prosecutor on the basis of Article 40. See, you have to realize that every new law that says is being implemented to protect certain minorities or to keep from offending anyone or to be used as a weapon against discrimination and for gender equality. All of those at their root have one singular purpose: to silence the children of God, to silence the witnesses of the gospel, and to silence any dissent. And anytime anyone brings it up, there's 3,000 churches they can point to and go, why can't you be more like them? Look, there's a pastor that wanted to teach a course on BDSM. I mean, that's comparable to homosexuality, sodomy, transgenderism, or whatever else mental illness you want to point to. Why can't you be more like them? And this is the narrative that we will begin hearing more and more of. They will single out compromised supposed Christians. They will single out compromised supposed leaders. They will single out compromised supposed pastors. They'll put the spotlight on them, and they will say, why can't you be more like them? Now, the problem is we're not supposed to be more like them. We're supposed to be more like Jesus. But that's something the world doesn't want to hear, because Jesus is offensive. Jesus said, go and sin no more. Jesus said, deny yourself. Jesus said, pick up your cross. Jesus said, follow me. We're not on board with anything Jesus said, but we're on board with the things that the outcasts and the perverts and the evil ones pretending to be sheep and shepherds are doing. We're on board with that. Don't be more like Jesus, be more like them. That's the message and the narrative the world will continue to pump out. And every new law, honestly, I've never gone out to persecute anyone, but I will stand on the truth of the gospel. And because I stand on the truth of the gospel, the day will come when I will be persecuted. And if you do, so will you. That's the reality of it. Now, another thing I wanted to get to before the program ends, and looky, looky, we've gone through 3/4 of it already. I know. You think to yourself, it's only been 5 minutes. It hasn't. It's been 44. It's not American. It's not even American prophetic. It's just common sense. If you allow millions and millions of people into your country unvetted, not knowing what their background is, not knowing what their affiliation is, not knowing what their beliefs are, eventually you'll get some in who don't want to assimilate, who don't want the best thing for you, who are not grateful or thankful for being accepted into your country, and who only want to spill blood. FBI director warns of elevated threat to public safety and national security. Do you think there's some sort of correlation there? Just millions of people crossing the border without knowing who they are? A preponderance of them being military-aged males that are coming in alone? Do you think there could be some correlation between the elevated threat to public safety and all those people that came across the border without ever once being asked, hey, are you here to kill us? I know, there's people on Facebook and other platforms. We love the immigrants, let them come in because they mow our grass. Not all the immigrants that are coming in want to mow your grass. I get it. I know you don't want to mow your own grass because, you know, the grass clippings and the sweat and whatnot. But it's such a I'm trying to be nice because I always do. People who've met me in person are surprised by how nice I am. But it's such an infantile mindset to say that under the umbrella of immigrant, and they're not immigrants because immigrant presupposes legality. And you go, well, newcomers and undocumented. No, the illegals who cross the border. They're not all here to wash your dishes and mow your lawn. I know a lot of people were hoping for more females so they can hire a nanny, but most of them are men. Oops, military age, oops. And they don't want to know how to work a lawnmower. They don't want to learn. So this is what the FBI director said. We live in dangerous times. This is the simple message that FBI Director Christopher Wray will deliver Thursday when he warns of an elevated threat to U.S. public safety and national security while seeking a budget boost. Why? Why the budget boost? Because if you don't deal with the one thing that precipitated the elevated threat, you can throw as much money as you want at the FBI. Eventually, that threat will materialize. Wray is set to tell a House of Representatives panel of just how America can be threatened through the execution and organized terrorist attack similar to the one that killed scores of people at a Russian concert hall last month. Looking back over my career in law enforcement, I'd be hard-pressed to think of a time where so many threats to our public safety and national security were so elevated all at once. Excuse me. I know I'm just a simple man. I don't claim to be a Mensa candidate or a Rhodes Scholar like Madam Hostin. But I would have a question for Mr. Wray. What, in your opinion, precipitated the elevated threats to public safety and national security? There's always causality in things. What goes up must come down. There is an equal and opposite reaction for every action. So pray tell, Mr. Wray, why do you believe that threats to public safety and national security became elevated all at once? Look, we've talked about this. Those of you that listen to the program regularly know that it's something we've been talking about for the last 2 years. It's not American prophetic. It's just common sense. It is what it is. Eventually, the people that came to this country with ill intent will be given the green light to follow through. They'll be given the green light to do very atrocious things to a public that doesn't have the wherewithal or the fortitude to stomach what they will do. It's one thing to read about it. It's one thing to look at some pictures of what happened in Israel. But do you understand that this entire nation will come to a grinding halt if one of those things, the likes of which happened in Israel or Russia, happens to this country or in this country? Look, right now, the FBI is just covering their own behinds. That's what it is. We warned you. We told you. Yeah, but what brought it on? What has this administration done over the past 4 years that allowed hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people to stream into their country without ever once asking, is that a blanket or a prayer rug? Hmm? Oh, not all Muslims want to see you die. No, not all of them, but some of them. You have to understand that every Muslim nation sees the U.S. as the great Satan. Israel's just the little Satan. If you don't believe me, do your homework. I know. You can go on the interwebs and find out that what I'm telling you is true. So if they've plotted and planned to strike a blow against the little Satan, what makes you believe that they haven't been plotting and planning to strike a blow to the great Satan? We're so coddled and sheltered in this nation that once you start seeing stabbings like in London, and I'm not talking about on the New York subway where, you know, you take your life in your hands and you hope to make it home, but in unexpected places like rich neighborhoods where ladies in skirt suits walk their poodles on a Louis Vuitton leash, once you start seeing those things, I see it going one of two ways. Either they will be allowed to happen because when someone is afraid, when a nation is afraid, it becomes far easier to control it. Or they'll have no idea it's coming, it'll happen, but they will use the crisis towards their own ends. Look, I wholeheartedly believe that they are looking for an excuse for martial law. They're looking for an excuse for another lockdown. They're trying their best, Lord bless them. You know, what was it? The bird flu, 1,000 times worse than the COVIDs. Be afraid. Well, you couple that, and I don't think it's dead. I think they're going to keep trying to fuel those flames with multiple attacks in multiple states and places that no one ever expected. And the people will cry out for tyranny because they'll think that the tyranny will protect them from the unpredictable. So I'm going to go in. I don't want to go into this, but I'm going to go into this just a little bit so you understand where I'm coming from. It's a lot easier to retain power than to get power. Once you have power, it's easier to hang on to it than to climb the ladder and get the power you desired. There are nefarious people within this administration that see the deaths of average citizens as the cost of doing business. If they believe they can retain power by martial law, if they think they can retain power by another shutdown and everyone needs to vote from home because the chickens will kill you, they'll do it. And if it doesn't work, it's just going to get worse from there. Anyone that's expecting a smooth ride or smooth sailing over the course of the next few months doesn't understand the lengths to which some people will go to retain the power that they've acquired. I know that a lot of you know my saying, they got one through the goalpost the first time. And it's the truth of it. We are on the precipice, leaning over, looking down. And rather than try to back up, rather than realize the danger the precipice poses, the only question we seem to be asking is, how far down do you think it is? How many feet to the bottom? Does it matter for anything over 30 feet? Once you make contact with the ground, kid, after about 30 feet or so, because I've seen people survive, you know, broken legs or whatnot, but after about 30 feet, the only question that is as yet unanswered is how far the radius of the splat. So we're focusing on the wrong thing. We keep looking and going, how far down? Right now, if we go over, it's done. That's it. It's high enough. The fall is great enough wherein survivability is non-existent. So this is what I'm seeing, and I think that they're covering their tails because they know. They know that they've allowed countless numbers of people with ill intent into this country, and once they're given the go, once they're given the green light, it will be like wolves shredding through sheep, because the average American citizen doesn't know how to cope with that kind of reality. So, an hour has come and gone. We've discussed some few things. We didn't get raptured, but there's always the next time. So until then, God bless you. God keep you. And Gino, if you've got anything to say, please do.
Thank you, Mike. Well, they did chant this week, death to America in Dearborn, Michigan, death to the USA, death to Israel. And our leaders are not even with it enough to actually come against that kind of rhetoric. People are going up to some of the leaders of Michigan going, are you going to speak against this? That they look like deer in the headlights. We are literally so much of a target right now. We're either blind and ignorant, but what Mike just described is going to happen. And if we have another 911, it's going to be way, way worse. Not if, when we have the next 911, it's going to be a whole lot worse than the first one. And, you know, God spoke in Romania. You know, I was at a meeting, Satamari, and a woman had a dream the night before. And in the dream, she saw the Statue of Liberty weeping. And she saw New York City. And then she saw the earth shaking. And the earth was shaking. After she saw the earth shaking, she saw fires in different parts of the U.S. And then God took her to Washington, D.C. and the White House. And God said he would remove two black figures from the White House. And there would be a time of reform. Now, I can tell you this much. Those black figures can mean a lot of things. And I don't add to prophecies. But whatever's coming to America that Mike just described is going to shake this country to its core. And we got to be ready, be prepared spiritually, be watchmen on the wall, warn even to them that try to shut their ears, they do in Michigan and other states, when people chant death to America and do nothing about it. The writing is on the wall, just like it happened with Belshazzar. So God help us to stay awake. Thank you for listening and to the Light of Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, The Light of Truth with Michael Boldea. If you would like to order a copy of today's broadcast, please visit our website at handofhelp.com. If you have questions about our ministry, you can email us at handofhelpoffice@aol.com or simply call us at 920-206-9910. God bless you.